Welcome to the show. I'm Travis Chappell, and I chat with some of the world's top business influencers, thought leaders, and entrepreneurs in order to crack the code of networking. I believe that who you know is more important than what you know, and that your relationships ultimately determine the person that you become. So if you want to learn the new way of connecting, if you want to fill your network with quality people and skyrocket your results, then you're in the right place, because this is the Build Your Network podcast. Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome back to another mashup episode here on Build Your Network. Today, we are talking about pitching, how to pitch and get real results, and featuring three of the best in the business. Once again, we have Brant Penvidik, who is the author of The 3-Minute Rule. And he basically goes into the essentials that you need to be able to build a winning pitch off of. And he is a reality TV producer and now helps a lot of entrepreneurs secure funding for businesses and things like that with the things that he learned in the Hollywood world, which is obviously a very competitive world, but been a producer of shows like Bar Rescue and Extreme Makeover, things like that. And he's one of the best in the business and literally wrote the book on pitching. So he's definitely at the top of that game. And then we have Kevin Harrington, who was the original shark on Shark Tank. He was the first confirmed shark that Mark Burnett reached out to and booked for Shark Tank back when it made its debut. He is the As Seen on TV guy. That was his company. He was the one that basically literally invented the infomercial after noticing that at, you know, midnight, 1 a.m. back in the 50s and 60s, or back in the 60s and 70s, that there wasn't any programming on TV. It was just dark. And so he basically took these people who were pitching these products at home shows and in the mall and different things like that, and he would help them build out the pitch better and then put them in these infomercial spots where they started to make money and start racking up revenue. And after a while, he turned it into his own business where he was just constantly searching and sourcing new products and turned it into a $500 million venture. And so he is definitely somebody who helps people with their pitches all the time and has heard so many pitches over the years. I'm sure we can't even probably even count the amount of pitches that this guy's heard. So that'll be a really great one. And then Sean Patel. Sean is a young dude who actually built his own test prep company. And he went on Shark Tank and won a deal with Mark Cuban on Shark Tank. So all three of these guys, Brant, Kevin, and Sean, are going to bring the heat for this episode on how to pitch better. But first, really quickly, if you are a podcaster and getting guests is something that you aren't super great at so far with your show, and that's a need of yours and something that you're looking for, especially the high quality guests, the top tier guests, some of the guests that we've mentioned here on the show today, then you're going to want to head over to guestio.com. That's G-U-E-S-T-I-O.com. And register for the pre-launch of the software that we're launching here in the next couple of months called Guestio. With Guestio, you can go on there and book some of the world's top experts in a variety of different fields for your show. So if you're a content creator, YouTuber, podcaster listening to this right now, head over to guestio.com and sign up. Just enter your email there and we will let you know when the platform is live, so you can be one of the first people to jump on there and start booking some of those quality guests for your own show at that point. That's guestio.com. And now let's go ahead and get into Pitch Masters with Brant Penvidik, Kevin Harrington, and Sean Patel. Are there any pitches that you had that you'd experienced that you're particularly proud of in terms of, like, you got a bad, you know, vibe or whatever from the person that you were about to meet with, but then after hearing your pitch, they were just kind of loosened up or warmed up? Is there any examples that you can think of?
I mean, the best one is in the book with the San Francisco 49ers. Go, yeah. Niners! I had worked with the president. He was a really good friend of mine. We had worked on TV shows, and when they built Levi Stadium, you know, they were looking at, you know, how we got to get sponsors on. We need a name sponsor. Was developing pitches for that, which was really cool. But the big one is, which people don't usually think of, is you build a new stadium, almost cost $2 billion. Your team plays 10 times a year. So how do you pay for that if there's only people 10 times a year?
Season ticket holders.
Yeah. But that's, again, 10 times.
Right.
So you got 355 days. You better put some things in there. And for a stadium like that, you need the big ticket items. You need Taylor Swift's concert to come. You need the Rolling Stones. You need whatever it is. Monster truck. You need it in your stadium. Mm. And for them at that time, the biggest ticket item was WrestleMania, WrestleMania is the biggest sporting event in the world. And every year Vince McMahon has a little sort of dog and pony show. Come to Connecticut. Tell me why I should put WrestleMania with your place this year. And so with the San Francisco 49ers, it was like, okay, we got a new stadium. How do we make that pitch?
Yeah.
And what was interesting was, is when you look at it, it's like, well, wait a second. You know, Jerry Jones or Tish is going to go in there and they're going to say the same thing every year. Like, why do you need them to show up there? They, like, the mayor's coming. They're going to say the same thing. Flight patterns. We're going to add extra security. We're going to make this. Like, they say the same thing. All that information is online. Why does he want you there every year? It's because that's what he does.
Yeah.
And, you know, at the WWE, they have this huge 7-foot statue of Andre the Giant in the lobby. Giant cut out of his hand, and you just, you can't help but put your hand in there, and you're like, oh my god, I'm so tiny and insignificant. And it's almost like on cue, the door's open.
Yeah.
And there's a bazillion foot table, and at the end is Vince McMahon and Stephanie and Paul, who's Triple H, and he has this reputation of when you get into that moment and you're gonna, you get your pitch started, okay, and he just sort of stops you. Guys, could you just tell me why we should have WrestleMania there? Like, can we just get to the point? Like, that's his sort of thing. He loves to throw you off. And listen, if you know, I love Vince McMahon, so he's just a certain type of character, right? He has a certain way of doing things. And so for me, looking at that pitch, it was, hey, we don't need to tell him how many seats are in the stadium. He knows it. We don't need to tell him how it's new. We don't need to tell him what we're doing. We need to just find out really what it is. Why are we pitching this? What are we saying?
Yeah.
What is the reason?
Like, what's the ultimate decision maker?
Yeah, like, what is it? What are we saying? And so eventually we came up with the pitch, the idea that, listen, the Silicon Valley is the center of the digital world. It's the heart of social media. Every major company is based there. Every major company is, has a box and is part of this, of the Levi Stadium. Levi Stadium is now the iconic building of the Silicon Valley. This is a chance for the WWE to be associated with every major tech company in the world. The whole world is moving digital. That's where that, that's where you need to be. And that was the core of what we were actually pitching to him.
Yeah.
Yes, it has 76,000 seats and all that other crap. But for the most part, that was the hook, right? And then for us, we, you know, he had the, they had this really cool program that they had developed for the seat ordering, where you could order merchandise and food and stuff right from your seat. You didn't have to go to the concourse and line up. So as the match is going on, if The Rock's in there, you could order a Rock t-shirt right there and have it delivered, which means the WWE could make more money on merchandise.
Sure.
So that came later, because that's what I call the edge of the story, is once the, he's already hooked, what is it? We're going to, you know, digital, and then this. So, but that was one of those moments in my career where I was like, oh, wait a second. Like, I think I have a career outside of television. I think is what I could do and not be in television anymore, because they're a big company. And it happened to me a few times where I'd go, you know, I'd go meet with a company that does type 1 diabetic anti-rejection drug therapy.
Yeah.
And the guy's got a wing of the Miami hospital named after him, and they're hiring me to come and help them. And I'm like, oh God, I'm a mediocre television producer. What am I doing here? But you realize pretty quickly that nobody really has all their shit together.
Right.
People have some of their shit together. Some people have a lot, but no one has it all.
Yeah.
And the skills you develop in other areas of life can be really valuable to a lot of people. People just don't notice that. And I realize those skills that I have are very valuable to people.
Yeah, do you find that when you go outside of the industry that you're used to, that people are more, I don't know, maybe impressed by the expertise because it's not something that's totally worked on in that particular sphere?
Yeah, it's a little, listen, the fairness is Hollywood is cool. Like in most of America, Hollywood's cool. And be able to do what I did in television, it just sounds cool and it looks cool and it's kind of sexy. Now
it's a huge credibility booster.
Yeah, it's none of those things. It's a pain in the ass, and it's a grind, and it's not glamorous, and it's hard, and it's competitive, but that's the way every business is, right? Yeah. And I remember, ironically, the NFL with Parag, the president of the team, we were pitching a show, and when we rented this big fancy SUV limo, and we were going to network to pitch the show at all different networks in one day. So they were up in the front seat, we were in the back seat, and I remember saying to my partner, oh my God, could you imagine working for an NFL team? That'd be the greatest thing in the world. Every Sunday is a different team, a different challenge. You're making moves, doing kind of cool stuff. You do the whole season, then you get ready for the next. Like, this would be the greatest job ever, right? And big NFL fans, we were just like, this is amazing. We go pitch a few shows, we go to lunch, on the way back, and I could hear them talking up a few hours later. And Parag goes somewhere and he goes, oh my God, could you imagine this was your life? Rolling around Hollywood, pitching ideas to network executives, having lunch every day, just trying to make things on TV. That'd be the greatest thing ever. And that hit me in the face like a ton of bricks. I was like, and so I stopped. I said, what are you talking about? Like, you guys work in the internet, isn't that the greatest job? He's like, no, not at all. It's nothing to do with being, you know? And you realize there's no green grass anywhere. If you have to do it for a living, it is a grind. But I have been able to leverage the sort of sexy, cool factor of Hollywood really well. It helped the book sell. It does open a lot of doors. And from a relationship building standpoint, it does change the game pretty quickly.
Yeah.
So I have a good perception, but I do the work. And you can't use perception if you're not willing to do the work to back it up. And so I'm all for people making their lives on Instagram look amazing and building the perception. But then you got to go, okay, now that I've got that, how do I make a business out of this? How do I deliver something? Yeah. It's just, it's a big part of it.
When, at what point did they reach out to you for Shark Tank? That was, I assume, before you sold As Seen on TV, or during that, or what was that whole time frame?
Before I sold it, because that was about 10 years ago.
Okay.
Burnett called. So, we were, I had, had a public company that was doing $500 million a year in sales. And I was, was doing all this crazy stuff with lots of, famous people. We did Kim Kardashian's first infomercial and Paris Hilton's first infomercial and Flo Rida. And, we're dealing with all these celebrities and products and great things. So Mark Burnett reached out. I went out and met with him, and it's funny, before I left my house, my wife said, where are you going? I said, oh, Mark Burnett called, and he wants to talk to me about this new show he's doing. She says, what is it? I said, he wouldn't tell me anything about it. He said, it's called Shark Tank. And she's like, wow. She said, well, wait a minute. He does crazy things to people on that Survivor show. I don't know if you want to be on something called Shark Tank. what's he going to do in that show, right?
Yeah.
So because when you think about it, Shark Tank doesn't sound like a business show.
No.
Actually, sounds like something on Discovery Channel, right? So, in fact, I've had people that say, I've seen you somewhere, and say, and I'm like, yeah, you see Shark Tank? And they're like, oh yeah, that, out there in the ocean, they're doing, Deadliest Catch or something.
Yeah.
It's funny. The other day I was on an airplane, a guy came up to me and he's like, are you on ESPN or what? I'm like, no, not ESPN, but it's a business show. So, but anyway, so I did the pilot and then, 175 segments after that. So I was like the original, they told me that I was the very first shark that they actually picked before Damon and O'Leary and Barbara and all the rest of them. So that was pretty cool because, I had interviewed with Mark Burnett personally, and he's like, we got to do this. So they had me do a little, audition kind of thing, and it worked out. Because little did they know, I had been taking pitches for years, because that's what I did as an infomercial guy.
Right.
Went to trade shows and took pitches.
Yeah. Did you have any personal relationships with any of the other sharks before the show?
No. Never met them all the night before we shot.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
So how has that kind of transformed over the last few years now? Have they become like really good friends? Have you guys done business together? How has that been?
Yeah. Yeah. We've all done business. O'Leary and I, we ended up like involved in a guitar deal for a while, and Herjavec and I did a couple deals, and Barbara and I did a couple deals, and Damon and I did a couple deals. So all the sharks end up doing deals with the other sharks at some point. I'll split it if you come in, and and it also, this is the thing, think about going to a taping of a TV show, and at the end of the day you're going to see 10 deals and you're going to invest money in two or three of them. Okay, well, it's like you almost would figure out, how can I spend a little less today? Like, let's say tomorrow I got to see 10 more.
Right.
How can I invest a little less? Well, let's split this one with somebody else, right? Because I got to say this, and this is something I don't like to say publicly, but, the sharks are there to help these people looking for money. But if you look at the deals that many of them have done, I would argue and tell you to say and say, do you think that these deals would be done if these people walked in the streets of Kevin O'Leary and pitched them some cupcakes? You know, I mean, he's on Wall Street. He raised $900 million in his own fund. And why is he doing a cupcake deal? Why? Because he's on the show, right? Mm-hmm. So you end up in deals that you wouldn't necessarily do. And that was the issue I ended up having, was I'm in a very niched business. And so after 175 segments, 20 some deals, they were like very few in my sweet spot. And I was investing in things that were very time consuming, capital consuming, and took me, I mean, while TV viewership is dropping, my time it spent to my core business was dropping also because I was so involved. I'd come home from a trip and have four new partners, and I got to get 28-page documents done and due diligence done and this and that and go see them and go to their offices and go talk to people that know them and check them out. And it was all consuming. So it was kind of like if you look at Barbara Corcoran, she was in real estate her whole life, sold her business. You know what she does now? Shark Tank. That's her business. I mean, she's got dozens of investments. She's doing very well. And I think she loves it, she doesn't have time to be, you know, doing
running a separate business.
You know? Show a home today? No, I don't think so. Right. You know, so so her model is, you know, she's got a model that works for her. I think she loves it. But, you know, she's probably put $8 or $10 million into the different companies that she's invested in. And some of these are small businesses that you may never see your money back for a long time until there's some kind of exit strategy when you think about it.
Talk to me now about next steps, like the process of going through the Shark Tank audition, nervousness, butterflies, heading into that room, meeting the panelists, and then the crazy high of actually getting a deal.
Yeah, it was an insane experience. I mean, it was pretty quick, like from when I auditioned to when they flew me out to Los Angeles to pitch the Sharks was like a matter of like two and a half months. It was pretty quick. And so, you know, I basically had prepared probably as much as I had studied for the SAT to be on Shark Tank. You know, like Shark Tank, it's pretty rare to be able to air on Shark Tank. I think, you know, I had auditioned with 500 other people in New York, but I think 50,000 people from across the country apply, at least at its peak, and like 180 get on television. So it's like 0.02%, which is funny because the chances of getting a perfect SAT score are 0.02%. So like to do both is like pretty rare.
Yeah, your next course is going to be called the 0.02% Club.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So So I had prepared hundreds of hours for the pitch, anticipating every single question that I think they would have thrown at me, etc.
Did you have help with that? Did you call up anybody and say like, hey, what do I even expect with this?
No. Oh, actually, I think I spoke to one other Shark Tank entrepreneur team and asked them, but it wasn't really that helpful, to be honest with you.
So it was mainly just Google and stuff you knew from your MBA program?
It was basically just Google, MBA, and just watching a lot of Shark Tank, honestly, like, cause you can anticipate what kind of questions they ask most entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
What was interesting was, you know, I'm a believer in like the art of storytelling. And so, you know, I made, cause I have the most boring business in the world. It's SAT prep, you know? So you know, how are they going to make this entertaining for Shark Tank is like, I made sure I had a lot of interesting, funny, personal stories to share. Cause at the end of the day, it's an entertainment television show. So I wanted to make sure that they air my episode and that we're not just talking SAT prep that's going to put everyone to sleep, you know? And so I had really interesting stories to share. But, you know, at the end of the day, when I walked into that tank, like once I saw the five sharks in front of me live in the flesh, like everything I had prepared, like went out the window, you know, like it was bad. Like I felt like I had blacked out, but because like, you know, the everyone just sees like 15 minutes on Shark Tank, right? Mm-hmm. Or 10 minutes, whatever you're on, 10, 15 minutes on television. But I was in there for an hour and a half. And so, you know, during that hour and a half, I was getting grilled and grilled, and like, they're just coming at you from every single direction. And at first you have like a lot of nervousness and butterflies when you're in there. But like at some point you just start like, I started like yelling back, you know, like it was just like, it was just like, you just are like, you're talking to them like normal people. And yeah, you're just up there for an hour and a half, no water. And that's why I'm like sweating by the end of it. You know, everyone's like, why is this guy so sweaty in 10 minutes? But like, that's why it's an hour and a half out there. And it was incredible. You know, for those that haven't seen my episode, like there's a point though that I look like a total idiot, because like, I think Lori Grenier asked me, do you want to be a doctor or do you want to be an entrepreneur? Because their biggest gripe with my business was like, why are you also still being a physician, et cetera? And so like, I look like an idiot. I'm like, I don't know. And so, you know, I wish I could go back and tell them like, I'd love to do both, you know? And, that's what I've been able to pull off now. And, Mark Cuban was able to see that, and he's the one that eventually ended up giving me $250,000, in exchange for 20% equity in the business.
And was that the exact deal that you worked out during the show, or was there like, hey, we have an agreement, and then afterwards we're changing it and working out details?
Yeah. So I hear all these horror stories of other Shark Tank entrepreneurs who changed their deal, dropped the deal, et cetera. So I think only about 50% of deals go through because there's a big due diligence process after the show. Yeah. But yeah, mine went through exactly as we shook hands on the show, which I think is pretty rare from what I hear from other people now. So I was happy that happened.
So in between the time that you shook hands until the time where you like had the capital and you were working with it in your business, first off, what was that time frame? Second off, what kind of progress or growth did you see in your business after you made the deal with Mark Cuban?
Yeah, absolutely. So I had a pretty lengthy due diligence period. And, you know, I think Mark does so many deals that his lawyers and accountants really sort of basically prioritize due diligence based on when you're airing. So like my due diligence process didn't really get going. Like I filmed in June, but we didn't really start working on due diligence and doing all the paperwork until like October, November.
Oh, wow.
Because I didn't air until January. So, you know, I'd say it was like 6 months before the money actually hit the bank account. And
do you have to sign a bunch of NDAs that say like you won't tell anybody that you got funded or stuff like that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. It was the most painful 6 months of my life.
I was going to say, yeah. You got like the biggest news on the planet and you can't even share it with anybody.
It was bad, man. Like, yeah, I could. Yeah, you're supposed to not share it with anyone on this earth that you were on Shark Tank. That you, like, I made a deal with Mark Cuban. It's like, I was just walking around Vegas, like, so depressed that I couldn't share this information.
Depressed from excitement. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly. A rare situation.
Yeah. Sure. So it was just so hard. I mean, I obviously told my parents, I think most people do. But yeah, other than that, I didn't really tell anyone. Even the people in my company, I think they knew we had auditioned on Shark Tank, but I wasn't allowed to tell them whether we made a deal or who we made it with, et cetera. So, but you know, I'd say that, yeah, that was about a 6 month process. And in terms of the growth post Shark Tank and post deal with Mark Cuban, I mean, it was incredible. We had done about $1 million in total sales, prior to Shark Tank. And since airing on Shark Tank, which it's been about 3 years now, three and a half years, we've done about $20 million in revenue. So, wow. I mean, we 20X'd. Yeah, it was incredible. The weekend of the airing, you had mentioned we had done about $500,000 in sales the year before Shark Tank. Mm-hmm. And the weekend of the airing, we did about, I want to say, $300,000 in sales. So it was almost a year's worth of revenue coming in a weekend. Yeah. It was just the like biggest dream come true for any e-commerce or digital entrepreneur, because like you just see all of these orders just every single second coming in. Mm-hmm. It was like no other marketing force I had ever seen. And for my business in particular, I think it worked well, because if you think about Shark Tank, it's really a show that a lot of families watch together. Mm-hmm. And so like my customer is not the high school student, it's the parent of the high school student. Mm-hmm. And so like all these parents are watching it with their high school kids and be like, okay, we're going to sign you up, you know? And so it was really awesome.
Yeah, man. There's so much stuff there to unpack. I have a quick question though for you on that. What was the most beneficial component? Was it the actual capital, or was it the connection to Mark and his team of like advisors and stuff?
Yeah. You know, I think it was definitely the connection to Mark. I mean, Mark has done incredible things for the business. Just to give you a couple examples, you know, he doubled our licensing fee to one of the biggest, or our biggest licensor. So we white label courses to another company. Mm-hmm. And he doubled the licensing fee, which resulted in over $500,000 in revenues since then. So I mean, like, he's clearly paid back on top of the $250,000 he gave us. I mean, that's just one thing he did.
Right.
Making partnerships with Amazon, redoing our accounting books. He even reached out to me, and we co-wrote a book for entrepreneurship for kids called Kids Startup. And that was really cool, you know, to be co-authors with Mark Cuban on a book. So like, he tweets stuff constantly for us to promote. I mean, he's got 7 million followers. It's like the best shark you can possibly have.
Yeah, man. I mean, this is exactly why I have this show, is to talk about exactly that. How connection can bring you to places in your life so much faster than doing it on your own, right? Mm-hmm. Like when you can get plugged into people who are doing things on a level that you can't even really comprehend, right? People like Mark Cuban, mm-hmm. When you connect with them, the things that they can do to generate revenue that's mind-blowing to you, that they can all they have to do is like send a quick email out, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, that's $500,000 in revenue. Okay, I guess mm-hmm. that solves that problem. You know, like you like things that you toil over and think about and like pour over and read 10 books to try to figure out. And somebody like that can just be like, oh yeah, it's this, this, this. Let me make a quick connection over here to this guy and he'll help you out. Boom, taken care of, done, fixed, let's move on. Like the speed that you earn mm-hmm. by getting connected to somebody like that is absolutely insane.
Well, that's it for today's show. If you want more advanced networking strategies, as well as an instant network upgrade, then consider partnering with my BYN Inner Circle Mastermind. There are already dozens of high quality entrepreneurs in the group. There's dozens of video lessons on networking. There's monthly calls, there's accountability crews, and more, all for the low investment of just $99 a month. So head over to byninnercircle.com to jump in. That's byninnercircle.com. Thanks so much for joining us on today's show. We'll see you next time. Remember to leave every relationship better than you found it.